Hello, Ollie here. This episode of the Outbreak comes with a content warning. The content warning is that Tim's microphone and computer were just terrible. You'll find out why in the episode. But do persevere if you can. Just bear in mind, it will sound quite glitchy. You might get frustrated. But don't worry, if you're listening on a train or something, just shout out, "Ugh, this is frustrating!" And everybody will understand because they'll all be listening. Anyway, enjoy this episode. It's going to be great. As the wintry sun slowly dips beneath the snow-capped hills. Or is it the hills blocking the sun? Maybe none of it is moving and it's just me. Perhaps I'm hallucinating. Is any of this real? We're making our way back to the Log Cabin Podcast Studio. Oh, and what's this? It's a Moncler Grenoble white space board. This stance is a bit weird. I'll just pop it in the recycling. And it's and it's time for another edition of the Outbreak.
Way! What, you're not... Hang on a sec. Hang on.
What
did you call it? You called it... You got the name wrong?
No, I didn't.
Called it a Moncler... What?
Grenoble.
Is that what they call...
Yeah.
Oh, it's not...
Yeah.
White space.
Yes, that's what it says. White space board. Is that what it is?
Well, that's what it said before you put it in the bin.
Yeah, well...
Would you not keep... So, don't tell Sean White. Sean White listens to this podcast and you've just put one of his... famous snowboards in the bin.
Yeah, but that's fine. We went into the recycling bin, Tim. Just think of all the amazing things that it can be turned into. Like, I don't know, like a wine
chair.
Box.
People yeah. love making them into chairs.
Chair. It could
Mate,
be.
What,
it
you know
be some
what?
Industrial foam for a sofa. All of that stuff.
Well, I've got a garage full of old snowboard decks. I got them out on the lawn once, and I looked at Luce, and I was like. Yeah, so we could have these up in there. She's like, they're not going on the wall. No, they're not going on the wall. But I'll tell you what I could do. We could make these. She's like, they're not going to be a bench. No, they don't have to be a bench, but maybe we'll get them. She's like, no, they can stay in the bag. In there. She's kind of right, really, isn't it? It's a bit weird when you go to someone's house in Bloxwich and they've got a snowboard bench in their back garden.
So bad.
It works in a Vorias. Yeah. It works in a Vorias to eat your hamburgers off. But when you're in Bloxwich in Warsaw and you've got a snowboard bench, that is a bit
it's
weird.
It's a bit like when you so have true. Those braids on holiday and think they're really cool, and then you get home and they're like horrendous.
It's nothing like the braids.
It is like the braids. No, yeah. I know what Jenny's saying. It's like, oh, I'm going to, this holiday is going to live forever. Yeah. I'm going to keep this going. It's like, oh God, that's amazing.
Get the braids in Jamaica. Land back in Cleethorpes, they look weird.
We come from our Log Cabin Podcast Studio, which is idyllic and lovely, but you might be able to hear in the background that there's something else going on, which is not usual. Tim, where are you?
Well, for this one, I mean, I'm not in the log cabin with you. I'm in my own actual log cabin because I'm in Bozell in France.
Woo!
I've actually come out to the mountains. I'm overlooking Courchevel, 1850, across the valley. It's pitch black, but I can see the lights of the Russians going up and down in their jet skis or whatever they're doing. And I'm staying with Chris Moran.
Aren't they banned? They banned?
What, the Russians or the jet skis?
The Russians. Are the Russians banned from Courchevel? I know it's a very Russian-heavy
jet
resort.
Jet skis? Do you mean skidoos?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That went straight
I was thinking
over.
Of Jamaica that and went, the braids.
Yeah. That went straight over my head. Yeah, aren't they banned?
Yes,
you
no.
Any Russians there now? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's not them. Maybe it's not them. Anyway, staying with Chris Moran,
who
converted
on.
An old donkey shed into what I think is the best house I've ever been in.
It looks from
this
here like a grand design type thing. You've got like
it
some
does.
Weird... Doesn't it? Like, is that a fire
behind you? Oh, Kevin Gisham
and...
would have a little erection if he came in this place. He'd be like... Unapologetic feel is what he'd say if he stood here and looked at this view.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really, it's done really nicely. Resin floors and wood and just bits. And actually, he recycled so many bits and bobs from old chalets Yeah, old snowboards that were getting demolished around the way. So, you know, loads of old chalets, and he'd go in there in the ruins and the wreckage and go, that looks like a nice door, I'll have that, thank you very much.
Did the owners
that's a good Velux window.
Did the owners of these chalets know that he was doing
that? I think they were.
Has he done anything polished, like a polished concrete?
Oh, polished concrete.
It's
isn't that the thing at the moment? Polished concrete floor, or
that feels quite 2006, actually, James.
Oh, sorry. Oops. Oh my gosh. Sorry.
Well, the hosts are telling me that the fridge itself is recycled.
Oh. Does it work?
A secondhand fridge, mate. It's massive. It's one of them American ones, double doors. Ooh. No, I'm being told it was $10,000. It cost him. Oh, but he got it for a steal.
He stole it.
It was $10,000, but he got it. He stole it.
Yeah, he stole the $10,000 freezer. Yeah. Okay, well, if you're looking for your freezer in Bozell,
really
it's,
nice.
It's in someone's posh donkey shit.
Anyway, it's Monday as we record the podcast. Haven't been on the mountain yet. No idea on the snow conditions. I do know that a friend of the podcast, John O'Verrett, is in town, actually, believe it or not, and I know he was up there skiing around, so very much looking forward to getting on the hill tomorrow. Woo!
Yes!
Yeah, we're jealous. How about you, Jenny? What have you been up to?
I've been down by the ocean. I have been surfing and Wilbur in the sand. I did a sea dip, did the cold water sea dip shizzle. I've had a brilliant 3 or 4 days. It's been mega. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Wilbur's eating loads of sand, so a few.
Yeah, they love that.
Few
don't
sandy,
they, first
nappy
time round,
just... poos.
I was going to say, has he had sandy poos? Yeah.
So that was cool. But yeah, I'm sure you know this, but it's like a love-hate relationship. So I had the best surf on the Saturday, and I was like, yeah, I still got it. I feel great. And then on the Sunday, I went in, and I was that person who went up on one knee, didn't manage to get all the way, and just ended up riding out in the wave like a total bunter. And I was...
No, you look like me. You basically look like me surfing. Yeah. Got to one knee and then just rode it in the exalted warrior yoga lunge.
I was so exhausted.
Jones.
I was
Give
so
up.
Exhausted. I had to just carry on Get- in.
Mushroom.
Yeah, I know.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, in the handful of times I've ever done it, that is exactly. I just fall in and I get beaten up by the waves on the way out, and then I just fall over.
Beaten up on the way out.
That's not what I do, but I was that person.
Yeah.
And you know when you paddle in, paddle in, and you sort of on your tummy, sort of just cruising in as if you've like just had a really great wave, but you're paranoid that everybody's just seen you coming on one knee and they're like, Ponta! Anyway, it was a bit like that, but it was so, I loved it, being in the sea. And anyway, that was that. That's me. I'm back now. My back is stiff, my legs are stiff, my everything aches, but in a really good way.
Oh, that sounds fun.
What about you, Ollie? What have you been up to?
I saved lives this weekend.
Oh, shut up!
What?
Yeah. I live by the sea as well, so I was down on the beach with my daughter and my brother-in-law, my sister, my partner, having a lovely time. And this beach is Studland Beach, which you might have heard of. But it's where they practiced the D-Day landings in World War II.
Yeah.
And Churchill actually watched them do that from one of the cliffs nearby, one of the hills nearby. Anyway, yeah, true. But what it means is, because they practice with live ammunition, you get live ordnance, right, sometimes in the beach, and people stumble across it from time to time. So I was on the beach, and we were making sandcastles, thought I'd dig a hole and that kind of thing. And I was digging away, and I heard a little like that. You just think it's a stone, don't you? And I was scraping around it. And as I was scraping around, it sort of emerged out the sand.
God.
And I was like, oh, my God. And it basically it looked like a huge hunk of metal that could have been something, and I was like, wow, this is weird. And I kind of knew there could be stuff there, but I was a bit like, whatever. And as I was like,
start
just
smacking it with the spade. Yeah,
well, I started like scraping around it, and then my sister, just as I was walking away, I was like, guys, you want to come and look at this? My sister just went, this is weird. And there was a sign that said danger explosion, right? This big sign, and it's saying, if you spot anything that even looks remotely suspicious, call this number. So we called this number. And then me and my brother-in-law were like, man in the beach. We're like, fucking, yeah, mate, there's a bomb there. We basically thought it was a bomb. There's a bomb. Just be careful, there's a bomb. And people shitting themselves. It's like, there's a bomb down there. Be careful of the bomb. And then he found some cones. We put some cones around it. And these three guys turned up from the National Trust, because they're hardcore. And they started looking at it. And they were like, oh, my God. They thought it was a bomb as well. Started scraping away. And then one guy got his hand underneath. He was like, oh, that's weird. It's flat on the bottom. And he pulled it out. It was a fucking rock.
Oh, what?
We were there for like almost half an hour telling people there's a bomb on the beach.
And see, that's when you just...
And you'd phoned it in as well.
Phoned it in. Yeah, but it gave you two numbers. It gave you that number or to dial 999. I'm so pleased I didn't dial 999. Can you imagine? 999, yeah, there's a bomb on the beach. Fuck me. Anyway, so that was my weekend. But, you know, countless lives saved, guys.
Did you just forever say afterwards, could have been?
I said it was a bomb until it wasn't, Jenny. That's what I kept saying. It was a bomb until it wasn't. So I feel great.
Yeah. Ollie, that's great. Well done, mate.
Thanks. I feel.
That is really.
I feel vindicated.
Shall we do the news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, bit of sad news to start. Well, American skier Catherine Kasia Rigby has just died in an avalanche in Kosovo. She was known as a pioneer of extreme telemark skiing and for many first descents. Born in Stovermont, of course, began skiing as soon as she could walk and then telemarked from a teenager. She skied all over the world, but she's notorious for doing loads of crazy, gnarly first descents quite literally all over the world. I mean, give her a Google, link in the old show notes. But basically, yeah, proper legend from the world of skiing, died in Kosovo, caught in an avalanche, unfortunately. Oh. So yeah, bit of sad news.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to segue onto the Natural Selection Tour, but basically the Natural Selection Tour, because I know a lot of our listeners did enjoy it, didn't they, last year?
Yeah. Yes, they did.
So that kicks off again this weekend coming. In fact, it's the 27th. It is the Jewels. So it's where they take the two riders, battle them head-to-head, put them head-to-head against each other. I did reach out to Liam Griffin, friend of the podcast from Natural Selection Tour, and he was going to get us some info, but he was in a meeting, and I reached him too late. But I'll see what we could do for next week's podcast and get a bit of info from him.
Yeah,
it'd be good. But it's all... The good thing about this is it's all going to be live on Red Bull TV, so you expect some fireworks, and just as the World Cup snowboarding starts coming to a close, you can enjoy some backcountry freestyle, which I know we all love.
Oh, yeah, we'll be chatting about that, won't we, in the next one. So, get watching. Yeah.
So guess what I did? I waxed my snowboard in the street in front of everyone.
Did you sort of feel like you were showing off a little bit, gloaty?
A little bit, although... The witches of Eastwick that live across the road from me, the two sisters, they were giving me strange looks through the curtains.
Hello? Charlotte, hello?
Who's that?
No. This is going to...
He had one job.
Charlotte, when
Jenny
do you knock on the door
that?
And go, hello?
Jenny.
Who's there?
You knock and wait for someone to answer.
Jono.
Wait. Oh, God.
Jono.
Jono who?
Jono Verity.
Hey!
Yay! He's been out there for so long in the cold.
It caught cold out there.
You got a
Come on in. Kick your shoes off.
Thanks, guys. Oh.
Do you want a drink?
Oh, can I not? Okay. Yeah, I'd love a drink, please.
What would you like?
Any drink in the world in this
snowball?
Chalet.
Baileys. I'll have a Baileys with ice.
Gendel had Baileys and ice last week.
That was weird.
2 weeks ago. What is it with you and Gendel having Baileys?
Yeah, any drink in the world would go for Baileys and ice.
What's wrong with Baileys?
No, nothing. It's just
wrong. No, tell me. Give me one thing that's wrong with it.
Well, I think sickly. When paired up against any drink in the world, probably quite a lot. But no, nothing largely. Well done. I admire your choice.
Yeah. While you take off those very expensive shoes of yours, because Jono has these expensive wellies that he bought in Alaska.
Oh.
How much were they?
No, they weren't a crazy expense. They're like $120. They're the tough. I think they're, what are they called? They're called extra tough.
Extra tough wellies.
Ooh.
From Alaska, though.
Clues in the title.
From Alaska. Best. They are my favourite thing that I own.
Oh, they all, yeah, are they snuggly thing. Inside as well?
They're nice and warm inside. Mm. They're just well made. There's no nonsense. Yeah, like that's what I like in life.
Are they
like
American made?
They are American made. Oh. Yeah.
All right. Well, while you take those off, I'll tell everybody who it is, because, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome yet again another frother to the log cabin. A man who first started riding snowboard boots with holes in that he had to wear supermarket plastic bags inside to keep his feet dry.
Nice.
A man that's had more different hair colours and more homemade haircuts than anyone else we know. He's popped the same lung twice, believe it or not. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Former pro snowboarder, a man with more front covers in the UK than any other snowboarder, turned filmmaker, turned cameraman. It's Jono Verity! Crowd go wild.
Hang on, I just want to pull you up on that thing about the most covers of any UK snowboarder in the UK. What was that?
And don't I know it?
I don't know, Ollie. I don't know. I've not checked if there's any other riders in the UK that have had 11 covers.
11 covers.
You heard it right. 11.
Well, how many? Yeah. Okay, and we're talking.
Jenny,
about...
how many have you had? Maybe actually, Jenny might have. She might have had.
Jenny's had a. You've had a few. One. Was that White Lines cover?
Okay, well.
Yeah.
10 and 11.
One. And I.
No, but
yeah.
Hang on.
It is 10 fewer than 11.
These are obviously all in print. And there isn't any. How many snowboard magazines are in print in the UK now? I don't know.
The Reason.
Yeah.
And also Pleasure Magazine.
Okay, so there's time. And there's time, Jenny.
That's it.
Oh, there's time for me to try and
get. You can get
no
10
chance.
More.
Do you know the only I only got that one after the blooming rings. Yeah, I got. That's the only reason I got that front cover. I remember Jono saying to me, because before he was like, "Oh, she might have a bronze medal, but she ain't got any front covers."
Yeah.
He was joking.
I have a way about words.
He was joking. Yeah. I want you to, there's probably an order to how we want to chat this through, but the lungs thing, because it's come in the intro, surely you need to tell the listeners and Ollie.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. This, yeah.
So I popped a lung in, was it 2005?
Yeah, we were doing some filming and I was brought on as at the time, that's when I was making snowboard films. And Jono was also a filmer, but he was also very good friends with the exec producer on a TV show called Rad. And it was the Rad on Channel 5 with Christian Stevenson, Grom's Ride the Rockies, where they took the best five Groms. It was Paddy Graham, it was Murray Buchan, Ben Kilner.
Loza Beza.
Yeah, Laura Berry and...
James Carr.
And we all went around America and basically filmed these kids being radical on their skis and snowboards. And Jono came as a bit of an on-slope cameraman / filmer / good guy to have on the crew. On stay in Aspen, and he saw Joe all he was, didn't he?
can I correct you?
Go on.
It was Park City.
Oh, yes, it wasn't. Yeah.
But... but yeah, basically it was like, right, I'm gonna show these kids how to be good. And Christian got all of them. There I am, like, I was like, there's the biggest jump in the park, I'm gonna jump off it. Really grim day. It was
a terrible day for weather, and actually it was one of those days, and Jono was doing his classic I'm going to pick the vibe up here with my own hands and knock it out of the park and yes. show everybody how to have a good time.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to show everybody that it's safe to jump this jump. I'm going to get the session going. Come on, guys, let's have some fun, yeah? And, yeah, Jono, you basically...
did a front side. I overshot the landing, so I reckon it was a 20-foot, maybe... 20-meter jump. I overshot it quite considerably. I did it with a front side 90 to toe edge.
Oh my God.
So I whiplashed my upper body into the landing. I popped my lung. I knocked myself out. I basically ended up in hospital for 5 days.
Oh. Well, he was heli-skied. He was helicoptered off. They made no two. The ski patrol took one look at him and went, "We're not touching this guy. Bring the best in." So they helicoptered the best guys up from the University of Utah to come and scrape him off the snow. That is where we got the legendary saying, "He's going to go big ass," because I was filming on the knuckle at the time. Just the right time to watch Jono go over this jump. And no, I was like, "Come on, let's chant for him. His name's Jono." And all the kids were like, "Jono, Jono, Jono." And it was like they'd all at exactly the same time realised he was going too fast. That they all petered off and went, "Jono." And then the one kid at the back, she went, "He's going to go big ass." And he went absolutely massive.
That's amazing.
He hit the floor.
Big ass. That's what
he went big ass. He hit the floor and exploded. I mean, it was horrific.
Oh my.
14 school children thought they'd just witnessed the death of a man live on the slope. And
oh, that's funny.
It was pretty horrific, to be fair.
Do you remember any of it, Jono?
No, in and out of memory. My only memory is the doctor down in the hospital. The doctor came over and he's like, "I'm going to do something that's going to be really painful, but I'm going to give you something that means you won't remember it." And I don't remember it. And that was when he put the tube in my side. But that's the thing that I then popped my lung last, I think it was last year.
Last year, yeah.
Was it?
Or year,
no, year before. Year before. Again, same lung. By hitting a tree on my BMX.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh, yeah, but you made this.
That must have smart.
Cracked my rib and popped my lung.
Yeah, but that's your...
But that time, they didn't do the, like, "I'll give you something." They just gave me, an enormous dose of ketamine. And it took me to a completely... I've never done that before. And it took me to a whole new dimension. I've never... It was quite profound.
Oh, wow.
That sounds incredible. That sounds amazing.
It really was. I was very, very close to figuring out the meaning of life while simultaneously traveling 1,000 miles an hour forward through a tunnel as well as the same speed backwards.
So if you pop your lung once, is it just easier to pop it again? Does it weaken?
Yeah, good question.
Or did you just slam it hard twice?
No. So the first time I literally popped it by just slamming that hard that I kind of split it. Oh. And the second time I broke a rib, and that's how
it.
You normally puncture
a
lung.
Like a balloon with a pin.
With a broken rib.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think I've done any damage. And as injuries go, I would highly recommend a popped lung over like many other, you know, because you don't really feel it. I mean, yeah,
stubbed
you do.
Toe?
A couple of days later, a few days later, you're... Yeah, but even a stubbed toe, you're probably more likely to have like lasting damage. Pop lung, that's fine. They just put a little incision in, tube, but then it's just flesh, isn't it? Or not flesh, but like offal. It just heals.
Oh
yeah, offal. That's awful. Yeah,
awful.
Pretty sure I've eaten a lung of some kind of animal. So okay, BMXing, snowboarding. What else do you do?
I do also surf. As far as are you kind of wondering what I do in the kind of like you're making, are you trying to get a list of radical things?
Yeah, radical things. I mean, you could tell me like I shop in Aldi. I quite like the radical things.
I occasionally mountain bike.
Oh, okay.
But, crash pretty good on that as well, though.
Yeah. Is Ed Lee a friend of the podcast?
Oh, he is.
Oh, Ed Lee and I, we go back a while, and we are equally as competitive as each other, which is a very dangerous kind of formula. And so whenever we go mountain bike, I think because I've been BMXing since I was 15, that I'm obviously the best.
Yeah.
He thinks because he's done more mountain biking than me, that he's the best. So we try to prove who's the best by being the best. And and the last time that happened, I ended up having like an MRI scan on my head at the end of the day from like doing a tomahawk down after a jump. And yeah, no, generally every time I go mountain biking with Eddie, you know, there's a fairly good shoeing is had.
Oh mate.
Well, let's wind it back. Yeah, let's wind it back to when we all kind of first met Jono, because his name was Backflip Jono. That's what he was known as back in the day.
He's a good snowboarder. You were a good snowboarder, Jono, weren't you?
Thanks,
not that you're not now, but you know what I mean. And like,
the kind of free ride squirrel style. I mean,
oh, free ride squirrel.
I was quite good at landing things. That was my talent, but not looking nice in the air.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like it from the track records
for
you've
11
just
moments. Yeah. Looks like 11 moments when they can click the button. You looked good in the air.
Yeah.
That's how you can do it with still photos. You can get a single moment in between the arm flails. You know, in between the winding of the windows, your arms are down, and if you get a photo at that moment,
yeah,
it looks pretty cool.
Can you just backflip anything at the time, Jono?
Back then, I'd backflip off cat tracks.
Did you ever get sick of being called Backflip Jono?
Oh, man, no, because the thing is, there was this weird era of snowboarding where backflips were actually the lamest thing you could do. It was like, oh my God, backflip's super lame.
I know.
And that's when I was called Backflip Jono. It was like, it was a curse, that name. And I quashed it in everyone. The only person I ever allowed to continue to call me Backflip was DJ Barbecue, Christian Stevenson. I didn't mind him calling me Backflip Jono. Backflip. It kind of sounded all right.
When you say Jono's a very talented filmer now, Tim, how would you describe that side of things?
Not really.
Oh.
Obviously playing it down. Very talented snowboarder. Had a very good career that lasted for a long time when it was cool to be a pro and wasn't a lot of money to be made. But you were quite good at putting yourself out there. You did a lot of cool things. He did a VO5 hair gel advert. That was pretty cool, wasn't it? But no, you did. You made a career of it. You lived in the mountains. You did loads of seasons, and you know, you had an amazing life. Or you still have an amazing life out in Europe and whatnot. But you the one thing you were very good at was you were very proactive. So whether it was building jumps or going to take pictures or hiking lines or whatever, you were so motivated, which was cool. And before any snowboarding, you were a filmmaker. You used to do a lot of filmmaking with your friends, didn't you? You always had a video camera. So when snowboarding came along, you had the video camera and the skills anyway. So you just started making snowboard movies, didn't you?
Well, I just hung on your coattails, Timo. Yours and Gendel's. Like, I just kind of snuck my footage in your videos. But
Was that
it was always really good footage.
Was that where was that your first love, your first passion? Was it filming, or was that something that kind of fell on you as you were like?
Yeah, no. So I loved filming. I went to my uncle's house when I was, I reckon, about 7 years old, and he had a Super 8 camera, and he had a video, Super 8, so it's film, of my cousin diving into a swimming pool, and. And then after we'd watched it, he wound back the tape and it played it in reverse. And I saw my cousin dive backwards out of a swimming pool and land on the edge of the pool. And I just thought, I want that. I want that. I want to control that. And I want to be able to do that. And that was my first kind of real memory of filming. And then that kind of led to just being fascinated by video cameras as I was growing up, and then hiring out them from the age of about 14. I used to hire a video for the occasional weekend.
What, with your pocket money?
Yeah, basically. Like, you know, like for like wedding kind of, you know, but I'd hire it out and make terrible films.
No way.
They're really, really bad. Yeah. And then I kind of got into snowboarding and it kind of took a bit of a backseat until I got the animal, my first animal contract. And then I was like, oh, I've got some money. I'm going to buy a camera and a laptop.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean...
And then realised that all of them, yeah.
Well, with just sort of filmmakers generally, a lot of them seem to come from some kind of action sport background, whether it's sort of skateboarding, BMX, snowboarding, surfing, that kind of thing. What do you think it is about it that you know, action sports that kind of lends itself to that and creating really amazing filmmakers that then go on to like make other stuff? I mean, you do commercial work as well, don't you? Do you work on like ads and that kind of thing? Like, why do you think that is? What makes it such a creative sort of place to work in, I guess?
Because it's more than just a sport. It's a very visual thing. Like, well, the way you do something is equally as important as what you're doing it, what you're doing. And then also, they've been represented, skateboarding, surfing, BMX, mountain bike, all these things have been represented from the day dot by being filmed. So it's like how it's filmed is as important as the sport itself, because that's the only way you can really truly represent it. And so, yeah, I think you just, it lends itself well to people who kind of have quite a visual
eye for that, yeah,
outlook on things.
And like techniques and stuff that you've learned, like filming, snowboarding, whatever, over the years, have you taken that into like, you know, much more sort of like corporate world, like a bigger world, and gone, oh yeah, I learned this on the slopes when I was messing around with my mates, and like bought something completely new to it?
Yeah, I suppose so, in a way. Like I shot a advert for Range Rover recently, and I was like, this would look good if I was snowboarding.
So that just sounds like an excuse to go snowboarding. With Range Rover paint.
Is that the one?
No.
Is that when you were in St. Moritz? Is that the sort of swanky trip?
No, that was for something else. No, I was
last
in,
week you were in St. Moritz.
Val Gardena. That was actually filming for a different thing.
Okay.
I was filming with Nathan Gallagher, yeah. That one. But no, the other one, the Range Rover advert, was in Val Gardena, and I managed to get an amazing skier called Annie Kissling, who used to do like downhill, and got her to do some skiing for us.
Also, did you not do you did a car advert once? Am I dreaming this up? And it was in Ibiza or something, and they put a car in the middle of this set, and you ended up ragging around on a skateboard. Almost before not before dollies, but before glide cams and all that kind of stuff. Have I made that up?
This is a kind of partial, an elaboration on the truth.
Right.
So
I've Ed Lead it there and added 10% on for...
About 78%, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, basically, in Malaga, there's like this amazing car studio, which is like an open air studio. And I did take a longboard just to get some, yeah, because honestly, that's like the best way of getting tracking shots. You haven't got any like walking motion and stuff. So hold the camera, give yourself a push, really, really smooth surface, and you can just wing around and get like epic, like, yeah, rolling shots.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we went to, you went to film out for Oakleaf with me and Will Hughes? Went to Iceland.
In Iceland?
Yeah.
I loved that trip.
It was so...
It was a hard trip,
amazing.
Though.
Amazing. Like, I want you to tell the story of what happened on the way back.
Hang on. What, when we got really, really stuck? And we nearly got, like, couldn't get through that river?
We got to back...
Yeah,
yeah.
I often...
Yeah.
I
should explain
I often
it a
think
little.
About, like, how dangerous
yes,
that
yeah.
is.
Yeah. So...
Or could have been. Because... So, basically... Sorry, Jenny. You go.
I'll give it a bit of context. But no, and then I want you to speak, because you're the guest. But, Ollie, just... I'd gone out for a trip with Oakley to film... It was basically just to film me doing some splitboarding, and we went in the hot springs a bit and all that sort of thing. It was absolutely beautiful where we went. Yeah. But we went to a place really, really out in the middle of nowhere, and these two massive kind of friendly Viking Nordic guys took us in these...
I know the type.
Really quite big... monster truck type things, and I asked Jono to come out and to do the filming, so we, you know, it took us a while to get out to the location, and we had to get over this big river, but we'd gone over this little bridge to get there, and anyway, we spent like what was it, three or four days there? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, and then...
I think, yeah, probably
and then,
that.
Yeah, but, and then we'll take it from there, Jono, because then what happened when we had to come back?
Well, there was a river, quite a fast-running river, and it was right on the edge of quite a big waterfall. But the river had, like, a few inches of ice on the top of it. So we drove these cars, and they kind of would crunch through the ice. But if you can imagine, like...
But the bridge had... Do you remember, Jono? The bridge had broken. We couldn't go across because the bridge had broken.
So we had to wade through it.
It wasn't there to cross in a...
That's right. And, like, the thing is, I kept on thinking, like, if the water level gets up high enough...
We're going to have to,
like, climb out of this car. Yeah. Or the car's going to float. Like, float towards this waterfall. But the most terrifying thing was, if you imagine, like, a few inches of ice... Loads of really fast water running under it. If you were to fall in that water, you'd get sucked underneath the ice.
It was so gnarly.
And, like, not be able to get out and then get, like, squirted out over a massive waterfall. Oh, it was, yeah, and in, like, minus 10, Jesus. 20.
So we're, like, in this car.
You were just like, yeah, I'll drive over it, no problem.
No, but we were all sort of...
Yeah, just like...
Do you remember as well, the guy was out on the bonnet, the Viking... I just call him the Viking man, but he remember his name.
He would have had a name. It was probably something
Viking
like Lax.
Norge.
Was out on the...
Norge or Scourge. Sven.
Was out on the bonnet as it was driving into the depths of the water, and he was cracking the ice with the pickaxe thing. And we were sat in the back, and do you not remember seeing the water level come up to the window?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the point where I was like, things could go, you know, this is like, you remember those, like, dial 911?
Yeah.
Dial 999. And these tourists thought it would be a good idea to drive across the rapid water.
The killer rapid river.
Yeah, no, that was pretty freaky. Definitely was. I'm glad we got away with that one.
Look, once again, we're doing all the chat. Now, the thing worth noting about Jono, we alluded to it earlier on, and the pop lung is a full testament to it, but what he said about Ed Lee and how when he's with Ed Lee, he likes to... Jono loves to go snowboarding still, and he loves to push people to do things way beyond their comfort zone. I feel like it's coming with me here... In Courchevel, over the course of the next couple of days, I'll be doing stuff that I'm really not comfortable with doing.
I hope so.
Probably trying backflips and front flips and jumping off things. But in the meantime, shall we all go and get pushed out of our comfort zones by Jono?
Yes. Let's go. He's going to go big ass.
Oh, that was so good.
Okay, this is the bit, Jono, where we're on the chairlift and you tell us a lovely story, funny or exciting or scary, that has happened to you in the world of snowboarding. Whatever you like.
Back in my youth, when I was first doing seasons, I was in Maribel, and I used to be well dodgy. So I used to teach a bit of snowboarding, or I'd be doing a bit of guiding. No qualifications, no idea of what I was doing, nothing. Completely clueless. And I got this guy, and we'd been like, right, I was just guiding him around, and he's like, oh, do you know where there might be any fresh snow? And I had this idea, there was this north face, it was right up at the top of Courchevel, in between Courchevel and Maribel, this north facing slope, and I took him up there. And we were wearing transceivers at least. I'm clueless.
So they'd have found your bodies.
They'd have been able to find our bodies. You had to do this traverse to get across into this like little kind of chute that I wanted to drop down into. And so I cut across first, and then just as I was like heading across, I just heard him go, whoa, a behemoth-sized avalanche. I mean, it was massive. It took him a long way down, and I rode down, and he was, thank God, like, on the top of the snow. He just was like, oh, that was quite a big one, wasn't it? And I was like, yeah,
oh my God.
It was kind of not that fair, but yeah, let's go.
Did you ever never do that again then? Or did you just...
Oh, that was like a perfect lesson. That was like the best life lesson I could have ever had.
Not sure I want to get off the chair.
All right, well, let's... All right, well, we're at the top. Strapping. Thanks for that.
That was lighthearted.
I'm going to stick to the piste. Right, here we go. Making tracks. We need your three song selections. So we have curated...
Well, let me get the cable.
A playlist. The mother of all playlists. Okay. So we need a track to get ready to in the morning. We need a song to ride to and one for the après. So let's start with getting ready. What song are you listening to when you're putting your boots on?
I do like a bit of Johnny Cash, like a Ring of Fire, maybe. Oh. That's a good, like, that's kind of a good, like, getting ready song, I think. Yeah.
Love is a burning thing. And it makes a fiery ring.
Bound. Oh, it's good, that. Love it.
Yeah. Why Johnny Cash?
Yeah.
Why Ring of Fire?
Well, I actually stole this.
What do you mean?
I stole it in the... randomly, years ago, I was in Borg St. Maurice... And for some reason, I was round at the Cracknells' house, like where they were doing a season.
Can't mention his name on this podcast. He does another podcast. Boo!
Every morning when they were getting ready, they would listen to the Johnny Cash song. And ever since, it's made me think of like getting ready to go snowboarding.
Oh, that's good.
That's nice.
That's really nice. Okay. Right. So you've done that. You've gotten ready. You're at the top. You're coming down, you're about to...
Oh, and now what song?
Yeah, but think, is it a song? You know, it depends what you're going to ride as well, I always think. So I don't know whether you're about to hit the park or go free riding or whatever it might be. What would the song be and in what kind of conditions?
I'm just going to be a bit annoying right now because the thing is I can't actually snowboard and have music at the same time.
No, but that's not... We always say that because it's just what you... is going on in your head, music-wise. Yeah.
I missed that. You fizzed out.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it.
Vamos a la playa by Corona, I think it is, or Miranda. And it kind of
is Ollie looking that up now?
Yeah, I've got...
Vamos a la playa.
By who did you say? There's a couple.
Miranda.
I think it's Miranda.
Not Luna. I'll play it, see what you think.
Play it.
Yes. This is it. Yes. Here we go.
Is it going to drop?
Is it going to drop? Yeah.
Oh, does it have a drop? Does it have a drop?
Here we go.
Nothing says Europe quite like Vamos a la Playa.
Oh my God. Oh God, it's going to be forever immortalised on our Making Tracks playlist.
That's on our playlist.
Oh no. It's the 40th song on our playlist.
It's epic. No, but come on. If you say you don't like that song,
I didn't say
you're
that.
Lying.
Yeah, no one's saying that. It has to be the right circumstances.
If one says it.
Well, goodness me, if that's what you're riding to, if that's the level, what are you doing?
Yeah.
In song then. What are you playing? This, what are you listening to? Final song.
I listen to a bit of Enya. But what's the one with the Jean-Claude Van Damme had the Volvo advert?
Oh, I know. Epic Split.
Yeah. That to this music.
I realise it's funny that I might like this music, and that I might be taking the piss. I'm kind of not. I quite like it.
Well, I'm going to say, Jono, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the log cabin. Thanks for coming to visit us.
Absolute pleasure.
You are a legend, and it's only actually when we talk to you, realise how much you've done. Does it surprise you how much you've done throughout the years? You've done so much, haven't you?
Just
say yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent most of my 20s sat in front of a computer. You've done loads.
He had a van at one point with his name on the side of it. Remember that?
That one point that lasted for 8 years.
Yeah. So nice to meet you, Jono. Hello, Ollie here. As you have probably realised, the audio started getting very, very glitchy towards the end there. The reason is that Tim and Jono happened to be in a donkey shed in France, in Beauzelle. And the Wi-Fi was, well, shocking. And we had lots of technical problems. Anyway, thanks for persevering this far. It meant that, frankly, we just had to cut the outro. It kind of went a bit like, oh, he was nice, that was great. Yeah, it was lovely. Oh, let's get him back. Wonderful. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Anyway, I thought I'd just record this little note to remind you that you can get in touch with the podcast and us at any time. You can email us at theatpraypod@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us on Instagram as well, at theatpraypod. Or alternatively, there are no other alternatives. That is the only way you can do it. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back with a slightly delayed episode next week on the Friday. Until then, take care.